This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And welcome, Dr. Lou. Good morning.
Well, good to see you once again, Miss Laurie. Certainly had a great weekend. Did you get to the Strawberry Festival by any chance?
I did not.
Well, I did. And let me tell you something.
So did a million other people.
You're exactly right. I mean, I went in the morning. It was kind of light. But I went back in the afternoon. And I'm telling you, I mean, I'm driving up Highway 90 to go 59 and come down. There were cars on 90 just parked all over the place. And then, of course, on 59, they always park on 59.
Right.
So, Lori's fixing my my microphone here so that you guys can hear me better.
After we went to the Sausage Festival and couldn't get sausage, I decided not to go to the Strawberry Festival because I knew I wouldn't be able to get
strawberry shortcake.
Did you? Oh,
I did, persevered. And I got some nice strawberries. Now, I have to tell you something, though. Okay, these are California berries. And they were $8 for the pint, okay? Then I went to Winn-Dixie that afternoon because we wanted more strawberries, and I got them for $3.50, and they were Louisiana berries. So whatever. Yeah. All right, so that's the least of our problems is getting strawberries, okay? So today, I mean, I have to say, after such a great weekend like that, to have to get back and get ready for the show and all the depressing stuff that you have to look at in order to get ready to talk about it.
Reality strikes.
Oh, brother. So here it is. So at any rate, Laurie, the game plan today is I want to get back and talk about the good old Ukraine. Now, we talked about it last week, but I want to frame this in a little bit different way today because after the war crimes issues with the atrocities in Bucha, we need to kind of frame this in a way that says, well, what exactly can we do about this sort of thing, and how far are we going to go in terms of trying to reestablish the rule of law in international relations, which, you know, I've always said in my IR classes, you know, international law is an oxymoron. It doesn't exist because the great powers do whatever they want to do, and with Russia, that's exactly what's happening. But after we talk about that, I do want to talk about what's going on in Texas and the border. I think it's interesting what Abbott is trying to do in terms of putting these illegals on buses and sending to D.C., okay? And there's a lot of hoorah and pushback and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we want to talk a little bit about that. Then after that, I definitely want to talk about Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation hearing. Now, Biden goes off the charts here talking about what a difficult process. And I'm thinking to myself, difficult? You've got to be kidding me. So let's tease that out. Another interesting story that popped up, which I think is worth looking at, is this whole question of Elon Musk buying about 9% or 10% of Twitter stock. And some of the things that he's been critical of in terms of Twitter just shutting down differences of opinion is an interesting take on perhaps the beginning of a rollback to all this big tech silencing of opposition. We'll talk about that in a second. I want to close with some of the state issues, and if we have some time, talk about some of the statewide candidates and where all of that is going. I mean, last Monday, the Republican Party of Mobile had a really good meet and greet, and many of the candidates came and talked about themselves and what they wanted to do. So I think it's worthwhile, you know, if I have some time to get into that. So, all right, let's start with this Ukrainian business, okay? I think that the question about what Bucha really means is something that you have to put into the context of similar type of war crimes that we've seen before, okay? And once again, the United States at My Lai did something terrible, okay? So it's not as though our hands are clean. But on the other hand, I am not going to make a moral equivalence about, you know, why what we did in My Lai fits into what the Russians have done. My argument is My Lai was an aberration, not an operation like the anti-war Vietnam War critics always maintained. Okay, that is BS. Okay, but having said that, let's frame Russian approaches to war and what they do as a matter of course. And so whether it's the NKVD under Stalin, the KGB after the war, whatever they have done, and they continue to do it under the FSB, there's a major problem here. They just do whatever they want to do to, you know, kill their opponents. And so you're left with Bucha being just another historical example of what the Ruskies do. And so, I mean, what else can you say? Don't think that they're going to change their approaches simply because they've had now 30 years of, you know, not being a communist-led country. It's just not going to happen. And under Putin, and again, we've talked about this, look at what he did in Grozny in the mid-90s. I mean, completely destroyed the city in order to suppress the Chechens. And then following it up, most recently, in Aleppo, where not only did they destroy the city, but they used WMD gas on the Syrians. And so there is this pattern. So I guess a couple of questions come to mind here. It's nothing new with the Ruskies. They're going to do it. But here's the real test. Obama said in Syria in 2012, if Assad used gas, weapons of mass destruction against his own people, that would be a red line and that something bad would happen. Well, they did it. Assad did use it. And nothing happened, okay? So what does Putin deduce from this, given the problems that Putin now is having in Ukraine? I mean, the argument that you're going to get from me here is that the fact is that he is in a pickle of his own making, and so the outcome of this has more, there's more to it than just Putin and not having some sort of political disaster on his hands because of the military debacle that's going on the Russian side of this. You have to kind of think carefully about if Putin really is in this pickle, what's he willing to do to make sure that his reputation and his goals are met in Ukraine. Now, we've talked about this last week in terms of, you know, what was his motivation about all this? And all I can say now is that whatever brought him to Ukraine has more than likely gone by the by, because now he's got to extract himself in a way that preserves his political power and his political reputation. So what does that mean in terms of what they're doing in Ukraine? Well, it seems like one of the things they're trying to do now is that they've moved their forces out of the northern area and started shifting them east to the Donbass area. And the thinking here is that if they can consolidate Donbass and link it up with the other coastal areas there, Mariupol, and then take Odessa on the western side of the Black Sea there, then that's a face-saving, you know, outcome. And it's certainly possible that he can do that. On the other hand, and just think about it from the Ukrainian standpoint, what's Zelensky saying? You know, they're not willing to give up a major portion of their territory. And not only is it a major portion in the east, but they really can't give up the Black Sea coastal cities because so much of their economy depends upon exporting their goods overseas, and that's how they can do it most efficiently. It doesn't mean that they can't do it other ways, but from a economic perspective, it makes much more sense to put stuff on the ships, ship it out cheaply, and get your goods out to the rest of the world, okay? So if Zelensky's not willing to make some sort of a deal and wants to keep fighting, and given the fact that he's had some real success against the Ruskies, so then what's the prospects down the road? I mean, General Milley said this could be maybe not decades, but years. Well, guess what? It's already been years, 8 years that they've been fighting in the Donbass region. So if that's been, you know, the recent history, do you think for a second both sides are going to find some way to agree to this? I doubt it. I think what's going to end up happening is that the Ukrainians hopefully will be able to have enough forces to kick the Ruskies out of the Donbass region and then launch a counterattack to the south and just hit the Russians on the Black Sea coast. They'd have them isolated. They would be able to, I think, do that after they consolidate, you know, the Donbass. So we'll see how this works out. But while all of that's going on, what's Biden doing? What are Americans' interests in what's going on here? And this is where I think it gets a little bit dicey. Because on the one hand, post-Soviet period, the end of the Cold War, saw the rise of a liberal approach to international relations, based on rules, based on norms, based on free market approaches to things. And let's understand this. The free market approach, even Zakaria said this, when China moved through Deng Xiaoping's moved into the reform period that Deng Xiaoping instituted, all of a sudden China was able to grow itself, and 300 million people or more came out of poverty. That's no small accomplishment, and India had the same effect too. But the point is, this all happened in large part, and George Bush the First basically said this is a new world order. Now that term has, you know, Nazi roots, and today it has even worse roots, in my view, with all of these globalists and the new world order and blah, blah, blah. I understand that, okay? But the George Bush interpretation was this rules-based approach to international relations. And if you want my opinion, it worked. It worked quite well for any number of people. But it really worked primarily because the United States was the sole superpower. The Ruskies were down and out after the Cold War fell apart. The Chinese, under Clinton, had been let into the World Trade Organization, and it took them 20 years or so to get themselves to the point where now they are challenging the United States both economically as the largest economy in the world and as, you know, in the military sphere. I mean, they certainly have a larger Navy than we do, larger Army, blah, blah, blah. So the point being, though, that this liberal order that came out of the Cold War, the demise of the Cold War, made it possible for many people to advance themselves materially and along the lines of more freedom. And I think that from this perspective, the demise of all that, based on what Putin is doing, suggests that if we let Putin get away with this, and I think I said this last week, then what's next? I mean, is he going to be satisfied with a portion of the Donbass linked to the southern areas and the seaports on the Black Sea? Is that going to satisfy him? Or is he going to use the excuse of, you know, oh, we've got Russian-speaking people all over the former empire, Kazakhstan, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Moldavia. I mean, if the rationale is Russia has got to take care of the Russian exodus throughout the near, what they call the near abroad, then where does this end? Does it really mean that we have to concede to Putin his goal of putting back together the Soviet Union's empire? I don't know. I mean, if you go back to the post-Cold War period and the fact that Poland and the Baltic states and others on the eastern side, Kazakhstan and others, they didn't want to be ruled by the Ruskies. And so, we're back to the fundamental question. Is the United States going to be the guarantor of individual states' sovereignty in the world? And with that comes, obviously, sacrifices. Sacrifices which we've been willing to make during the Cold War, whether it was the Korean War, Vietnam, or during the War on Terror. You know, Iraq and Afghanistan. And again, not, you know, without getting into a full discussion about justification for Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, Afghanistan is a no-brainer. Iraq is a little bit more difficult, but when you go down the list of, you know, those items that are necessary to meet just war criteria, then it seems to me that that's exactly what Iraq met. But nevertheless, I don't want to get onto a tangent about this. But my point here is, I mean, we fought Saddam in 1991 over his taking of Kuwait. What the hell is the difference between that and what Putin's doing today? Now, the difference is the United States now is facing a thermonuclear power. And that takes us right back to the Cold War Cuban Missile Crisis, where we're eyeball to eyeball with the Ruskies. And Khrushchev blinked. All to the good. In this particular case, is Putin going to blink? Is Biden going to be the American president who draws a line in the sand and sticks with it? I mean, given his track record on being wrong on so many different foreign policy issues, I don't have the slightest doubt that he has no idea what to do, and all he's done so far is send signals to Putin that, you know, I don't want to, you know, escalate this. I don't want to give you a reason to do something really bad. I mean, that's why they slow walked so much of the equipment that Ukraine needed, that Trump had set in motion to get to him. I mean, that's what it is. So if that's the case here, where you've got an American president who may very well be compromised, I'm getting into my Hunter Biden thing here, but let's face it, Hunter Biden, excuse me, and his laptop indicate clearly that the family made money off of its name based on Big Joe, you know, the big one, or whatever they called him. And so you have money coming from Ukraine, China, and Ruski. And guess where the problems are today? Ruski, China, Ukraine. And I would suggest to you that if you can put trust in Joe Biden to do the right thing here, you may be misplacing that trust. Okay? It's that simple. So what are our interests here? It certainly is not to let Putin win. How do we do that? Going to send in the 82nd Airborne? Hell, they're right across the border. No. Send them MiGs? No, I don't agree with sending MiGs, and I sure as hell don't agree with establishing a no-fly zone. But I do believe that with the proper defense, air defense systems, we can shoot the Ruskies down. And if they ever get the Iron Dome worked out to where Israel decides that, you know, keeping the Russians happy just so that they can go bomb the goddamn Iran. Oops, sorry. Oh, I got a jolt from Lori there. So that they can go bomb the Iranians in Syria, you know. I'm sorry, it's too heavy of a price to pay. Get the Iron Dome to Ukraine. Get them the tanks they need. Get them, you know, get them whatever they need, and do it quickly. Especially with this humanitarian disaster. I mean, these poor people in Mariupol are starving. Now, how are we going to sort that one out? But we need to figure out a way to do it. My point again, what are America's interests here? And if our America's interest is not to let Putin destroy the foundations of the liberal world order that came about as a result of the, you know, collapse of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, then we better damn well sure do be doing something to preserve that world order. And I don't mean a globalist world order, okay? It's not what this is. Notice how the UN finally stepped up to the plate and kicked the Russians out of the Human Rights Commission. Guess what? You've got Cuba and China also on the Human Rights Commission. Forget about it. I mean, that has been a living joke for all these years. But be that as it may, that's one small step in the right direction. But here again, we get back to the fundamental prospects of actually putting sanctions that actually work. We just now have cut off the oil. But the Europeans haven't. They're still taking, I think, about $3 billion a day in terms of Russian energy. So all I'm saying, folks, is, you know, yes, we don't want to trigger another eyeball to eyeball with the Ruskies like we did in 1962. Scary stuff. We don't need that. We don't want to see hundreds of millions of people killed, and we don't need to see, you talk about climate change, you know, a nuclear war could very well spell the end of civilization and humanity. Excuse me. So we don't want that. But we certainly want Putin to lose. So all these smart people in Washington kind of figure this out, what they can do without triggering a major war, okay? And that's where I am with this, and I think we better get on with it. We can't let Putin win. It's that simple. So let's talk about something maybe we can win. Texas, thank God we've got Abbott down there saying, I'm going to bust these people, these illegals, right to D.C. and put them on D.C. step, and by God, you know, let them sort it out. Great idea. Some problems with it, supposedly. It's illegal for him to do this unless these illegals voluntarily get on the bus. Okay? Now, and Abbott's point is, look, I'm going to give them a piece of paper. They're going to see it in Spanish or English. Of course, that assumes that they're all Spanish, but there's a whole lot of different people coming on. But be that as it may. So he gets a form. They sign off on it, and then off they go. We'll have to see how this works out because the ACLU and others are demanding that this doesn't take place because these poor illegals will be just forced into signing it because these guys with guns and badges are going to be intimidating them to say yes. I really don't care about whether there's intimidation or not. My feeling is put them on the damn bus, too bad. Okay. Oh, I've just said three bad words today. Okay.
I take it. You can read my face. Oh, yes. Be careful. You've been warned. Yeah,
stepping over that line.
Okay.
All right. So I say, let's test this theory out. Because until we take back Congress, the House and the Senate, there's nothing that's going to stop Joe Biden from doing this. Okay? So let's just keep hoping for November that we do take it back, and then maybe we will take care of fixing some of this. Until that time, I think we're in trouble, deep trouble. I saw that the Texas Lieutenant Governor was saying that 20% of all the illegals are going to just be in the United States because of what's going on right now, the war. I mean, it's almost up to 2 million illegals that have been let in since Biden came in. Can you believe this, Lori?
Unbelievable.
It is. Yet it's there. Okay. Let me quickly talk about the Hunter Biden business. I mentioned it a few minutes ago, okay? The national security implications of this is this, okay? Hunter Biden, through his laptop, we've discovered, and again, Senator Johnson and Grassley put out a report in September of 2020. They have now come up with yet another report that's even fuller in terms of where they were, because they've had so much more information come out, okay? And the bottom line here is that, you know, Hunter Biden did all the things that Grassley and Johnson said and what the New York Post wrote about, all of which the mainstream media dismissed and killed that story. 50-some-odd former intelligence officials, these are the people who were bought and paid for, you know, came out and said, this is Russian disinformation. Excuse me. And Biden even said that in one of the debates, because Trump was going after him on the Hunter laptop, and all Biden could say, that's Russian disinformation. BS. Okay? It's quite real.
Can't that be considered election interference?
Yeah, I mean, but here's the question that you have right now is, how much extortion has gone on? How much intimidation has gone on that will sway, you know, Biden in his policy choices? Again, we're talking Chinese money, Ruski money, and what's the other one? Oh, gosh.
China, Russia.
Ukraine. Sorry. I mean, all of these things are now, we're involved with all this. What sort of decision-making is he going to have here? Well, it's interesting. Now that the New York Times and the Washington Post have admitted that this is a real problem, then I guess all of us can go forward and say, yeah, really, it's a real problem. No kidding. It was a real problem, and stupid Mike Wallace, you know, shut down any debate that they had in that debate in October of 2020. Absolutely unbelievable. All right. Sorry, I need to just get a quick...
Well, you're listening
water.
To the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review here on WABF. If you can't hear all of this program or you'd like to tell a friend, it will be posted for listening later at WABF1480.com.
Thank you, Lori.
You're welcome.
My trusted assistant here bails me out again. All right, so... Here's Ketanji Brown Jackson, historically first black woman on the Supreme Court. Two prior blacks have made it, Thurgood Marshall and a really great Judge Clarence Thomas. But it's not historic for them, but it is historic because she's a woman. Okay, fine, got it. But listen to what Biden basically said, you know, talking about the confirmation process. Now, frame this along the lines of what we saw with the confirmation. And again, some of you who are listening may be old enough to remember Judge Bork's confirmation. Oh, that's where the term borking came into play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They destroyed him. You remember Judge Thomas's confirmation, where they dredged up all sorts of outrageous lies, okay? He finally got through it. And then, of course, Gorsuch and the rest of them, the most recent ones, all have been Republicans, and they have been scorched with the worst. I mean, I've never seen anything like some of these things that these Democrats have come up with. When you talk about a vile, absolutely no holds barred attack on people, that's exactly what we've seen, okay, in recent memory. I realized Judge Bork was a long time ago, but it hasn't been so long for the rest of these people. And so when Biden goes out in the Rose Garden and starts talking about the difficult process she had and the anger that the Republicans showed and the fact that they interrupted her and asked questions that were outrageous. I mean, think of it for a second. I remember watching Cruz and his questions. They weren't outrageous. They were calm, cool, and collected, and he asked her some very pertinent questions about why she would go down the road of lessening the sentencing for these, you know, child abusers. I mean, isn't it the Senate's job to kind of dig into some of these questions? But that's unfair. Oh my God, it's racist to ask this. So all I'm saying here is that just don't think twice about criticizing Jackson. She deserves to be criticized on the basis of her judicial, you know, rulings, okay? And I think that it's totally bogus for Biden to say what he did. I will say one thing in her favor, and this is an important thing. In her talk, she came out and basically said, my family went from segregation to the Supreme Court in one generation. This is the United States, and this is what we can do. And guess what, folks? She just blew away BLM and Antifa and all the rest of the woke idiots because she does not subscribe to the systemic racism. I mean, if we are systemically racist, how the hell did she get to where she was? Unbelievably a great statement, and I think that we on our side need to applaud her for that and just remain skeptical of what she's going to do as a Supreme Court justice. But if there's a turning point in the BLM attack on American society, it's right here, if we use this correctly. Okay. Well, Lori has done me good today. I'm now 3 minutes over, almost, and I didn't get to the stuff I wanted to in terms of the state. Next week, I promise, we'll have someone on. We'll talk about the session, and we'll get a readout on what happened, why it happened, who it happened to, and who done it.
Good idea. How's that? Looking forward to that.
We will do that. Okay. So, folks, have a great week. God bless. Take care. See you next Monday, or hear you next Monday, or you'll hear me next Monday. Whatever. Bye.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lou. We do appreciate you. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. This program airs live Mondays at 10:05. You can also listen to it later at WABF1480.com.